Atlanta has a healthy appetite for improv and a whole slew of places where you can see it. We talked about this last week with comedian Colin Mockery of Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Anyone can do improv. I mean, all our lives are improvised. So basically, the two rules are doing the things that we don't do in real life, which is listening and accepting other people's ideas. That is the hardest hurdle for new improvisers to get over. There's that thing in us where, no, my idea is better. And once you learn to let that go, you can be a good improviser.
Dad's Garage welcomes another headliner this week. You may know Scott Adsit as Pete Hornberger on 30 Rock.
Who drank this? This is the scotch I was saving for my birthday. Someone with the key to my office, a janitor or a security guard or some black-hearted individual, probably white, has ruined the Hornberger hang for all of us.
Scott Adsit is in Atlanta this weekend at Dad's Garage Theater and joins me from New York. Hi there.
Hi there. How are you?
I'm doing well. So, I mean, how much do you think of your performance experience? I mean, you started out at Second City, but at this point, how much of the performing that you do is actually improvised?
Well, I still do a lot of improv on stage in New York and around the country at festivals and things like that, and at Dad's Garage. It's still a big part of my life.
Why?
Because I get to do it for no money.
Isn't that in the con column?
Yeah, well, no, it's just really, really fun, and it allows me to be with people I may not be with otherwise and play with them. And I just am surrounded in New York and in Chicago and in L.A. by all these people I've worked with over the years, and I just love to play with them. So I get on stage as much as I can.
So I'm wondering if you also take what you do in improv into your regular life. And I say that because here's this comment from comedian Mike Birbiglia. He was speaking to NPR about how he uses improv.
The principles of improv apply to everything. I mean, saying yes and helps in parenting and being a good husband and being a good friend and, you know, any kind of collaborative job, working at the radio or working at an advertising agency.
What do you feel about this idea that improv actually bleeds into everything you do?
Well, it becomes a philosophy once you kind of like get into it. I think new students of improv get over a hurdle and suddenly realize how broad their horizon is, and they kind of apply the rules or at least the guidelines of improv into their everyday lives, and they become happier people because they're more accepting and they do listen and they apply these tenets that really make you have a better time on stage by serving everyone else. And then that really applies in life as well. And just little things, like I had a teacher say to me once on stage, if you're interested, you're interesting, because there's a tendency for some people to play for a laugh that they're not interested in what's going on. And it just kind of stops the action and your character becomes less interesting. And that applies to life too. If you're someone who doesn't have any interest, then you're less interesting. And the more interested you are in something, the more people want to pay attention to you. And so there are a lot of things like that that just apply very communitively to everyday life.
You know, it kind of struck me as interesting that another one of your passions seems to be stop motion animation. I mean, you did Moral Oral and then also Frankenhole, both for Adult Swim. And to me, stop motion animation is sort of the opposite of improv.
Well, kind of, yeah.
Yeah, one is totally spontaneous, sure. And one is like every single second is sort of agonized over.
Right, but all those agonizing seconds are based on spontaneous moments that we write down. So we find spontaneity while we're writing or while we're kind of like throwing out ideas at each other, and then when the animators, these brilliant animators, get in the booth on their stages and start animating, they can translate that spontaneity into something beautiful.
So let me ask you about typecasting or ending up being typecast. Because for some people, you are always going to be Pete Hornberger from 30 Rock. And I asked this to one of your co-stars, Jack McBrayer, who's from Georgia. And I guess people ask him all the time if he's worried about getting typecast. Here was his response.
I have a couple different responses because I think of people like Don Knotts and I think of people like Bob Newhart, Andy Griffith, B. Arthur. These are actors who didn't stray too far from, you know, their signature style. And they worked for decades, and they worked very well. So So for me, it's not about like getting typecast. It's like, let me just get cast, and then I'll worry about type later on.
Does it ever worry you that you'll may always be known as being on 30 Rock?
Well, I'm very proud of being on 30 Rock, and I'll never say I'm not. I do like playing. I mean, I kind of grew up on the stage where I got to play a lot of different types of people. So I enjoy the idea of playing lots of different kinds of guys. It doesn't always happen, but when it does, it's the best part of my job because I get to play something I'm not used to playing. Am I afraid of typecasting? No, I'm not afraid of it. I avoid it because I feel like I've already painted that picture and signed it, kind of. So I want to, you know, see what else I can do, and or at least show what I can do.
Well, I mean, I guess it helps that you don't have a Georgia accent, which might help.
That's all. Jack is faking all of that.
I'll tell you him know, he said that.
No, he's from Long Island, and he just adds ma'am to stuff.
Well, then, I mean, people may not realize you played a really different character in a hit movie, but they may not have realized it was you because you were the voice of the robot Baymax in Big Hero 6. Let's hear a little bit of that.
I am Baymax, your personal healthcare companion.
Baymax, I didn't know you were still active.
I heard a sound of distress. What seems to be the trouble?
Oh, I just stubbed my toe a little. I'm fine.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate your pain?
A 0?
So how different is the job of voicing a character as opposed to acting a character?
Well, quite often you're alone in the booth, for one thing. You're just kind of dealing with the director and maybe the writers.
Does that make it harder to not have energy to play off of?
It can. It depends on the kind of scene you're doing. With Baymax, I am in the booth alone, but since Baymax is generally a collection of previously recorded words, he doesn't have a lot of emotional interaction. And in the course of the movie, it kind of bends that way, and you can kind of infer emotion from him. But generally, he's just kind of like reorganizing the library of words he has and giving them back to you. So that's not unusual. I think it probably works a little better for me not to get too emotional with people in that movie and the series we're doing. But in things like Moral Oral, we had this tiny little booth, which is about the size of a New York shower in a New York apartment. So like, you know, 4 feet by 4 feet and a mic, and 6 to 8 of us in a room gathered around that mic.
I hope you all showered.
Sweating on each other. Yeah. Oh, I wish there was a shower head in that booth, believe me. And we would do entire scenes, sometimes, you know, 10-minute scenes, all gathered around this mic and playing off each other.
How do you keep from loving someone too much?
Glad you asked, Oral. Love is a very beautiful, very intense feeling for a startlingly short period of time. Before long, you realize it just gets in the way of the real important things in life, like just going to sleep or being left alone.
And that's really great. But I don't have a preference, really. I think it's cool to go down a list of lines, which is generally what you do, and just see how you can craft it and change it and really just listen to your skate along your voice and play with it.
If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with comedian Scott Adsit. He's performing a series of improv shows at Dad's Garage Theater Company in Atlanta on Friday and Saturday. Perhaps more than ever in the United States, at least, comedians are becoming a political force, or at least in some way political commentators. So much so that, say, you know, Jimmy Fallon has got himself into a lot of trouble by tousling Donald Trump's hair. And that's a show that he thinks of as being completely non-political. And I wonder what you think the role of a comedian is in either talking about politics or leaving it alone.
Well, I think it's just down to the comedian. There's so many types of comedians in the world, and the ones who point at political stuff have become very important now because everyone's thinking about how the world is coming apart because of who we elected. I think they're very important. And the problem is, I think they get maybe to be a little too important recently, because I think the audience now views it's possible that they're viewing politics as entertainment and just fodder for something to laugh at. And of course it isn't. There's terrible, terrible things happening. I think comedy can point out truth. That's what good comedy is. Any good comedy is just pointing at truth. And that can activate people. Understanding something because it makes no sense, and you see the truth of the nonsense, and you need to fight against that, then I think that can cause an uprise, and that's great. But then there also is the more passive people who just see it as something happening to other people and just a source of delight, which it can be dangerous. But I wouldn't say that they shouldn't. I think it's more important that we have as many voices as we can in this debate, and especially the ones pointing at truth.
Before we go, I got to ask you about how things have changed in television since you first started in the industry. Because, you know, Tina Fey went straight from doing 30 Rock, well, not straight, but kind of directly, to working up a show for Netflix. Like, we live in a really different consumer environment for television than even 10 years ago. And I wonder if you see that as a net positive or a net negative.
The only negative, I think, is that we're not all watching something at the same time and we can talk about it the next day. And there's kind of a shared community in watching something, which we used to have. But nevertheless, we still, you know, there are days when no one on TV, including CNN, is talking about anything but Game of Thrones, which is interesting. And we still have these touchstones and references that everyone kind of knows. And I think it's good that the Netflix and Amazons of the world are attracting big talent like Tina, because they're the new format that is a little more lenient, a little more broad-minded, and allows things that maybe wouldn't be allowed on regular TV, and also avoids commercial breaks. It maybe frees up the writers to write without having to have a cliffhanger every 6 minutes.
What was the last thing that you binge watched?
There's a British show called Utopia, which was on a couple years ago. Did you ever see it? It's a conspiracy theory thing, and it's really well written and really well performed. It's great.
Okay, well, that is comedian Scott Adsit. He's performing a series of improv shows at Dad's Garage Theater Company in Atlanta. Improv can't be binge-watched. You can get detail at gpbnews.org. Scott, a real pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you.